This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and in this Forum segment, we're joined in the studio by National Public Radio's new president and CEO, Yarrow Mohn, who started his career in radio as a disc jockey under the name Lee Masters, and he became a top executive at MTV and VH1 and helped found the E! Entertainment Network. He says listeners need not worry about NPR's public radio mission changing, but he says he'll bring commercial media expertise to shore up the organization's finances. He joins us to discuss his vision for the future of NPR, which now boasts a weekly terrestrial reach of some 28 million and almost 40 million in his digital platform. And we welcome Yarrow Mohn to San Francisco and to the Forum program. Glad
Thank
to have you.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. I must confess to you, I had this feeling before I went on the air. I've been interviewing a lot of CEOs at NPR in the last 8 years since Kevin Close left.
You won't have any problem booking. I hope to change that dramatically.
I'll be back a lot.
How's that? I will.
Here's a public promise from the new head. He's going to be out here on the West Coast.
I am.
Be more visible here. But there's a perception here that maybe there's some instability with all this fluctuation at the top tier of management. Yeah. Can you address that?
Well, sure. There has been instability. There's no question about it. I don't think anyone would have wanted this kind of instability in this organization, an organization that is such a national treasure, so important to America and to an informed citizenry. But I am doing my part to solve that. I've signed a 5-year contract, and I've given my verbal agreement to the board and, more importantly, to the staff, to the people that work at NPR, that I'm here for a minimum of 5 years. And I gave them a kicker. I said, I'll stay longer, but you got to make it fun for me.
Well, we'll hope to do what we can out here on that behalf. But you've also talked publicly about putting the fiscal house in order. And a lot of people have this perception that they don't know how much we're operating at deficits as far as National Public Radio. There's an actual prospect of about $6.1 million just this year alone. And a lot of people have this notion, Mrs. Kroc left things gilded for NPR. They don't have to worry because of that $20 million endowment. Just not the case.
No, $250 million.
I'm sorry, $250 million.
Big numbers.
Left out a five from the middle there.
Which has grown significantly because of investments. It would be financially, it would be really foolhardy to live on that. So that has certainly helped tide the organization over in the interim during these really tough years. But that's not a good plan. That's not a plan. Survival is not a good plan. Thriving is, and making the organization very successful.
Well, it's a board budget crisis, really, isn't it?
It was, I will tell you, because of the great work of my immediate predecessor, Paul Hager, who is interim CEO, who is a business guy, and the management team. They've worked very hard. And they've gotten that deficit that you talked about down to -1 this year. We are delivering a budget next year to the board. Hopefully it will be approved, that shows that we're out of the deficit business and break even and beyond. And once we've done that's a budget on paper. And as you know, you can have a budget on paper, and until you deliver it, until it actually happens, it doesn't mean anything. But that puts us on a footing where we can do the kinds of things that can grow the organization, because just getting by, just getting to break even isn't really a good strategy. We want to increase corporate underwriting. The people that listen to KQED, the people that listen to NPR, as you know, deeply engaged, deeply committed. It's an amazing audience, and they're very hard to reach. We don't think we've told the story well nationally for corporate underwriters. Same thing with institutions, foundations, big donors. We haven't gone in. There are so many people now, as news organizations go, drift more to ideological approaches or sensational approaches, fact-based journalism is just, it's disappearing in a lot of places. So people know how important that is. We haven't asked them in a big way to support what we're doing.
You have some radio background as a disc jockey, but mainly your background has been in business media and so forth. And what about those who say, does this guy really have the chops, when it comes to journalism? You're talking about fact journalism, which certainly NPR has established, as you said, a rather stellar and golden reputation for. But is this a handicap for you in terms of or a disability, coming into this without much journalistic experience?
Well, I think but for what I've done the last 13 years, the last 12, 13 years, I've been involved with public radio in Los Angeles with KPCC. I was on the board for 12 years, and the last 3 years as chairman of that board. So deeply engaged in a very successful, very much like KQED, news-oriented public radio station. Raised a lot of money for them. So anybody that wants to question that, I say, well, ask them. Pick up the phone and ask them.
You can go to Google and find out you gave a lot of money to them,
well,
too.
Well, we did that, too. The other thing is that and not as well publicized. For the last, I don't know, 8 years, I've been on the board at the Annenberg School of Journalism and Communication at USC, and for six or seven years, chairman of that board. So deeply, I'm not a journalist, but I'm deeply committed to journalism.
Well, when Gary Nell took over, there was all this of Sesame Street and NPR, yeah. And a lot of people don't necessarily make the connection, but you certainly do have a good deal more experience in all those years with KPCC particularly, which will, we hope, lend and enhance the work that you're about to do in rolling up your sleeves. And part of that includes expanding platforms. How do you envision that?
Well, there has been a lot of work done already at NPR and, again, across the country at some of the more forward-thinking public radio stations like KQED for digital platforms to reach almost anybody. One is tempted to say younger audiences, but that's not necessarily true. It's not just younger audiences. It's people of all ages who are digitally savvy, using their iPads, their iPhones, Android devices, and making sure that our content and our programming is available wherever our listeners are. So there's been a great move in that direction. I think in the past, there has been a lot of concern certainly on some of the stations' part that that in some way means we're moving away from terrestrial broadcasting. We're not. Radio is the legacy. It's the past. It's the present. It's also the future for a long, long time, I believe, for public radio. But digital is it's here. It's now. We got to be there as well.
We'll still be in your dashboards, not
yes.
fair on that score. We're talking, by the way, if you just joined us, with Yarel Mohn, who is the new CEO and president of National Public Radio. We'll give you an opportunity to speak with him as well. Talking about new directions, though, you have a creative director now at NPR. This is the first creative director. I think she was named in January, Liz Danzico, who's, I guess, talking about not only the visual, that is the audio side of radio, but the visual side of radio, expanding the whole experience of radio into the visual realm, which seems to me to be a whole fascinating way to move. What do you do about, I was just thinking about Gary Nell, and when we talked to him about dispelling the notion that this is liberal radio or this is progressive radio.
Well, it's not. There may have been a time 40 years ago when National Public Radio began that that's what it was, but it really isn't. And I was really struck when the announcement came out of my taking this job. I got hundreds of emails from friends, and everyone I've ever met since kindergarten sent me an email to congratulate me. And many people, as you well know, KQED listeners, NPR listeners are deeply devoted, deeply passionate, deeply loyal. And I was really struck by how many conservative friends of mine are also huge NPR listeners. And I would ask them, tell me what you think. My immediate predecessor, the interim CEO, Paul Haga, conservative Republican, loves NPR, thinks it's the last bastion of, you know, fact-based journalism in the United States. So there is that perception amongst a small group of people and, thankfully, a diminishing group of people. Part of our mission, if we do our jobs right, is to make sure that everybody knows this is NPR. This is the one place you're going to get a very balanced look at what's going on in the world. Fact-based, no ideology at all.
You, just in doing my homework and getting background on you, you've had some connection to the Democratic Party and actually supported our friend Bob Reich, who is over at Berkeley now.
Yeah.
And This gives the association, perhaps, of liberalism, doesn't it? So how do you dispel that? I mean, you've just given the good speech about how, you know, we're not concerned about ideology, we're not partisan and all that sort of thing, but people will identify you with those things.
Yeah. That's not to say I personally am not ideological, but, you know, I have my points of view. I keep them to myself now because in this job it's really important for me to be in a very neutral, unbiased position. I've made a commitment not to give any money to any party. I didn't give exclusively to the Democratic Party, but for the most part, I was supporting Democratic candidates. I'm not doing that with any candidates while I'm in this position.
So you're going to register? Jim Lehrer wouldn't even register. You know?
I haven't given any thought that I probably should.
I said to him, what kind of citizen are you? You're not even registering.
I'll register as an independent. But so that's the difference between me as an individual and us as an organization. We have an incredible wall between the organization itself and the newsroom. I have never, nor will I in any way, and I didn't at KPCC ever have any conversation with anyone in the newsroom about a story other than to tell someone, I think you did a great job covering that.
talking again with the new head of National Public Radio, Yarel Mohn. And let me give you an opportunity to bring your own questions and comments. As Yarel Mohn said, you are, so many of you, I know firsthand, very passionate supporters of National Public Radio and KQED and the work that we do. And of course, we do have our critics as well. And let's hear from you. If you have questions or comments, you can join us now at our toll-free number. And this will work whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, it's toll-free. Questions about the future of National Public Radio under its new leadership, 866-733-6786. Other ways, of course, to have yourself heard or join our conversation or ask questions, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. Let's talk just for a moment before we go to our callers about diversity. I know you're very committed to it. We got 77% of, at least the last figures I saw, of those working in National Public Radio are white. Mm-hmm. And it's always been an ongoing struggle to make more color. And in fact, well, this is before your tenure, of course, but there was a program called Tell Me More, which had, you know, a lot of appeal to people of color. $6 million savings program went. And some people are saying, and you got a new building at National Public Radio, you got a gym in there, all these kinds of things. How's this money being spent? Now, again, this isn't, you're not culpable for this. You're in a honeymoon now, but
the honeymoon lasted 6 weeks, Michael.
Oh, you mean it's over already?
It's over already. Trust me.
Well, but talk about this. I mean, how do you really plan to, because there's been a lot of rhetoric about diversity.
Well, the really important, the board, the search committee, when they looked to fill this position, one of the three must-haves in the job was demonstrated commitment to diversity. And so I point to the work we did on the board at KPCC. There's an organization where 52% of the newsroom are people of color in Los Angeles. It's been remarkable. The work of Bill Davis, who's the general manager there, and the incredible management team. It wasn't my doing, but we tried to be as supportive as we could. When it comes to NPR, the management team, the staff there, absolutely 100% committed to diversity, and they've done a great job. You mentioned 77%. The inverse of that, the remaining piece, is 23%. It may not sound like much to most people, but if you look at most newsrooms in the United States, Los Angeles Times, 23%, Wall Street Journal, 22%, Washington Post, 22%, New York Times, 18%. Okay, Radio and Television News Directors Association, radio station average, 16%. Television station, 16%. Radio station, 10%. 23% is not bad. We're at the top of the pack. Now, are we doing as well as we should? No. Do we need more people in editorial positions, management positions? Yes. Do we need more ethnic voices on the air? Yes. And diversity isn't just ethnicity and race. It's age. It's political ideology. It's geography. I'd love to have some Southern accents on the air.
Would you like to have maybe some working class people, too?
Absolutely.
All right. And just give that whole inclusive sense of diversity. Here's a website comment from a listener. It says, no, don't increase corporate underwriting. Decrease it, please. I hate the commercials and foundation promos on NPR. It really muddies and destroys the brand.
We're not increasing the amount at all. We are simply do a better job selling it. We have undersold it in terms of the value that we're getting. The amount of money paid for each mention, I think, is really under-optimized. We're not talking about increasing the amount. Of the announcements, we're talking about increasing the amount of the money. Same number of units.
Another listener says, why does NPR dwell on the big sensational stories that deal mostly with violence and hardship around the world that we already know all about instead of the innumerable stories we don't already know about and that are worthy of NPR's valuable airtime? We don't need NPR to follow the other news outlets in the philosophy, if it bleeds, it leads.
We don't. I don't know what that person's listening to. It's not us.
Another website comment, then we'll go to your calls. It is indeed important to put the NPR fiscal house in order, but it is also important to redress the dumbing down of NPR content. Increasingly, I and my friends, and indeed our children, are getting tired of the juvenile, stupid content and presentation. NPR sounds like talk radio today. Again what are they listening to?
I don't know what they're listening to. I think it's the most thoughtful radio out there today, and we're committed to that work. The organization is all about explanatory journalism, taking stories that people may not know much about and explaining it to them, investigative journalism. I mean, I think one of the best things that was ever done, and I don't know, perhaps this listener thinks it's dumbing down, on the Planet Money series, the big pool of money, 2 one-hour specials only about subprime mortgages, explaining something that's very important and but very complicated when you're talking about CLOs and CDOs and tranches and the way, you know, mixing good credits with bad credits and credit ratings. A tough story, but an important story. And Planet Money did 2 one-hour specials starting with a guy who admits he should have never gotten a mortgage, hearing his story in human terms. Then they go to the next link in the chain, the guy who sold him the mortgage, then the company that bought the mortgage. And you follow this one loan all the way up to the hedge funds and the investment banks. So people really got a sense. My wife, my two adult daughters, they would never spend more than probably 5 minutes or less trying to understand subprime mortgages, as important as it is. They listened to 2 hours of content on NPR, Planet Money, because it was an incredibly well-told story. I don't think that's dumbing down. I think that's explaining something to people in terms that make sense to them.
Let's go to our callers again.
Am I going to need these?
No, you won't actually need these. Being headphones, you can hear off the monitor. This is Alex from Palo Alto. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Welcome to NPR, and we're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I like that you said that you wanted to make things more fun. I am concerned about corporate underwriting. I heard you just say that you're going to be increasing the amount of money, but not the number of units. But some corporations, you know, we don't want them underwriting NPR all that much, like pharmaceutical companies or maybe Monsanto. Can you speak to that?
I don't really have a well-formed point of view on that. It depends if they're advocacy commercials or if they're, which we don't take. We don't do anything like that. To be honest with you, we haven't even looked at this. Has not become an issue internally that I'm aware of anybody wanting to be a corporate underwriter and us having a particular challenge with it.
Well, thank you for the call, Alex. There is a sense of more fun being tied to maybe the kind of programming that's been very popular. Car Talk, for example, was exceedingly popular. And so is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We just had Peter Sagal on, in fact, just a couple weeks ago. Does this mean more of that kind of programming?
No, I don't think that's not an immediate priority. I think those things are working really well. Car Talk's been on for who knows how many years. That's actually
no, –
they're not producing it.
That's reruns. Yeah.
But it's been on for a lot of years. To me, it typifies – it's a great example. My mother is 92. My mother could care less about cars. She loves Click and Clack. They've been able to take a topic and make it really fun and interesting for people. Now, I think we can take that approach with a lot of things. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a great show. They have fun with news events. It's also just an amazing thing to see live. If anyone's ever gets a chance, when you folks here at KQED bring them to town,
they were recently in town, but the tickets just were not even available.
I saw them
when
at Red Rocks.
Peter came on the air. I couldn't say there are tickets available because they weren't available.
It's a great show. We like that. It brings in a different audience. It gets people used to using KQED and listening to KQED and NPR. So it's really helpful in that regard. But for the immediate future, the next 18 months, 2 years, we really want to double down on what's the most important, which is the news coverage, and specifically Morning Edition and All Things Considered. These are the real tent poles of our organization, and I want to make sure that those journalists and the producers and the writers and the people and the hosts that work on those shows have the resources they need to put the best content that they can on. Maybe later we'll experiment.
Well, I want to know what you mean by having fun. That's
Having fun is more of a mission inside the building than it is on the air. Having fun on the air is not one of our priorities. We want to make the news and what we do interesting. We want to make it fascinating. We want to make it engaging. I don't know that I would say, fun would be one of our priorities.
A lot of our listeners think, not to go into programming too deeply here, but a lot of our listeners were very disheartened when Talk of the Nation was taken off the air and still don't understand the reasoning behind it, even though we had Neil Conan on and talked about it here. But possibility of a program like that coming back?
Absolutely. There's no reason not to, or something along the lines of Tell Me More. There are a lot of great ideas inside the building. We have a lot of great management talent. We have a lot of journalistic talent. We're not at a loss for ideas. We have to right the financial ship. As I said, this year we're delivering a balanced budget. And then it's up to me and our organization to go out and get the money so that we can expand and do more content like, or you know, whatever the next version of Talk of the Nation or Tell Me More happens to be.
Let me go to a couple more of our emails. Rick writes, I sit on an advisory committee for the new UCSF hospitals opening in Mission Bay, February 2015. We recently saw the new interactive system to be installed in patient rooms on a 65-inch screen, and there was no radio application in the entertainment section. When I asked, I was told patients could use music streaming like Spotify. I responded that folks over 50 think that's a dry cleaning product. It suggests that most 20, 30, even 40-somethings do not see radio as an essential source of news and entertainment. Do you agree, and how can we bring the value of this wonderful medium to the younger generation?
Well, I agree with his general concept. I think we should, I think that's an incredible oversight with the people that designed that system. I don't know that it's necessarily 20s, 30s. I think there are many people in the 20s and 30s that are listening to public radio, KQED, NPR, deeply engaged, deeply committed to public radio and news and information. Many of them get it on digital platforms in addition to terrestrial. I can't speak to that hospital and why the interactive system didn't have it. Clearly, somebody wasn't thinking through all the needs of the people that were there.
Particularly, maybe the subtext is that radio is being perhaps eclipsed by all of the possibilities that younger people have in there that they can avail themselves of. And then radio is not their thing.
I think some people think that, and there are a lot of people that do not use regularly radio, but there are so many people that still do. And I really believe that terrestrial radio, you know, AM and FM, are going to be with us for a long time.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Yarel Mohn, the new CEO and president of National Public Radio. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another of your calls. Steve, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Krasny. How are you today?
Thank you. Okay.
I just wanted to point out that a couple years ago, NPR was attacked by the right for being too liberal. And what happened was that a lot less programming was made, you know, by NPR that had any kind of bias, quote unquote. And I think that that's a huge canard. I don't think that the divide between we should be looking at is, you know, right and left. I don't think that that's really where the problem lies. I think the problem is the corporate, you know, viewpoint versus the truth. And, you know, as corporate sponsorship increases and as, you know, the new president, you know, claims that he wants to increase corporate sponsorship, I want to know what he's going to do to make sure that these corporations aren't influencing the kind of programming that's getting out on the radio. I mean, it's impacted me. I've donated for many years, and I don't feel like I need to donate this year because corporations seem to be taking over NPR.
Steve, excuse me. You see things in terms of more corporate takeover, which means a more shift to the right for NPR. That seemed to be implicit in your initial comments. I just want to read an email here from another listener. It says, I found it hard to listen to NPR in recent years. I'm college educated, well-read, and a fiscal conservative. In my opinion, NPR has made a dramatic shift to the left in the last 5 years, more or less. I mean, there you have it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, on any issue, any controversial issue I don't know that it proves that we're in the center or that we're not biased, but on any given issue, we have people on both sides arguing you're too far to the left, we've moved too far to the right, we really are, and this is really interesting, to be as fact-based as we can, to be a journalistic organization, as cable television has become more ideological. I like to see, you know, you have Fox News that has staked out the right. You have MSNBC that staked out the left. CNN has staked out the Indian Ocean.
It's a good line.
People have, and local television news has become very sensational, generally speaking. Paris Interactive does a study every year of news brands. They test 12 brands domestically in the United States, including the BBC, but New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, all the, you know, Al Jazeera, and us. And This year, 2014, NPR was ranked number one in trust in news, number one in quality of news, and number one in emotional connection with the listeners.
Well, you mentioned the cable news channels. When I do my little bit for fundraising, I always point out the fact that we have more listeners on National Public Radio than the combined viewership of CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. I mean, that speaks
the newspapers. You have to add up the top 51 newspapers, 51 newspapers in the United States to get to the 28 million that just listen over the radio.
I've got a trucker who called in from Kansas, and he wants to know, why not put Morning Edition, All Things Considered, on satellite radio? It would be a good revenue stream, and truckers can hear it, too.
I don't think it would be a great revenue stream compared to our partner stations, our member stations. We derive a good portion of our revenue from stations like KQED and KPCC and KCRW in Los Angeles. And these are the crown jewels of NPR. And putting it on satellite would, I think, then make listening to the FM or the terrestrial radio stations less important. So we're not putting those on satellite.
We'll go to another caller. George, that's you. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Oh, hi. NPR does a great job of making podcasts available for most of their programs. And, in fact, the way I listen to NPR, I'd say half of the content I listen to is time-shifted, listen later on a podcast to make it more convenient to my schedule. There are, however, a few programs that are not available on podcast. There's one, I forget the name of the program, but it's at 4 o'clock on Sunday. It's about the definition of words. And that one is not available on podcast. So I'm wondering if you're going to enhance the podcast capability or what your thinking is on podcasting.
Well, podcasting, you know, and digital platforms are hugely important for us. Most of what we produce is available digitally. And segments.
Well, excuse me, our producer tells me that's not an NPR program.
Right. I didn't think it was.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there racking my brain trying to figure out what it is. But, every once in a while I do get stumped.
But you're going to enhance podcasting? Or?
Well, we think there's a lot that we can do with the NPR One platform, the digital platform, which KQED was a big participant in. It allows users to customize in a mobile digital experience, listening to the local news, the national news, local stories, national stories. And so I think there's going to be more in that regard. But we, more than anything, we want to make sure that our local stations have the ability to still garner a huge audience.
Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I wish you good luck. You're going to need it. We hope for the best. Yarrow Mohn, he is the new CEO and president of National Public Radio. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about the difficulty of giving children freedom and letting them take risks in, an overprotective generation. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.